This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mike Missanelli Podcast, special podcast as we do want to react to the ongoing series between the Sixers and the Knicks. It is Friday, April 20th, podcast number 181. It's brought to you by Bet Rivers. Now, don't forget the Bet and Get promotion. The Bet Rivers app is going on right now, where if you bet the first basket, whoever scores it, the first basket of a game, you will get a profit boost up to 100%, depending on what your activity has been on the Bet Rivers app. It's at least 20 and it could be 100. So take advantage of the Bet Rivers bet and get. All right, the big story. Actually, two monster stories last night, but let's take the bigger one. The Sixers saved their season, basically, last night by winning a must-win game at the Wells Fargo Center, where it was 50% populated by Knicks fans. So the home court advantage was nice, but Sixer fans sold their tickets for a big price for that game. And I don't know how to react on that. On one hand, if you can make five times what you pay for the ticket and you need the money, I guess knock yourself out. But there is a violation, a natural violation, selling your tickets to Knicks fans or any, like the Mets fans. We could do it. We can go all the way down the line. You know, if that game, if the Knicks had been in control of that game, the Sixers might have been in trouble. But they win the game. And for now, it's a series. It's 2-1. Now, if they lose Sunday at 1 o'clock, that's the next game, the series is over. So that's also, in my view, a must-win game. I predicted this whole time this series would go seven games. I still think it will go seven games, which is it means the daunting task of the Sixers having to win a game seven at Madison Square Garden. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Joel Embiid, a performance for the ages, 50 points. He shot 21 free throws, made 19 of them, played 41 minutes. And, oh, by the way, he was diagnosed with Bell's palsy, which was kind of crippling the side of his face. I've known some people that have had that. In fact, we can go back to a Seinfeld episode. I'll bring in producer Darren in here. Before I get to the crux of this, Seinfeld episode with Bell's palsy, what was it?
Well, you know, I'm really good with Seinfeld, but I'm drawing a blank. Bell's palsy? Yeah.
It was the guy that Jerry met on the plane, and he had to be taken off the plane, and Jerry was tasked with taking care of his dog for a week. The dog's name was Farfel.
Be friends with him.
And Farfel continued to bark, and he was going to give him away. And finally, the guy said, "I have about a Bell's palsy."
Farfel. Yeah.
All right. So that's beside the point. It's just a little sidetrack here on today's podcast. Let's look at Embiid because, you know, it's really funny. I'm looking at this game, and I'm comparing it to the last game. And frankly, he's running out of gas. The first two games in the fourth quarter has run out of gas. And I've been defending him about, you know, listen, the guy just had surgery. Maybe he's not in the greatest cardiovascular shape. In the fourth quarter, he wears out. He's playing with pretty quickly after a meniscus surgery. I had a meniscus surgery. I don't know how long it took me. I know I don't have the trainers that he has to get him back, but it's not a joke. And you're going to be sore. And so last night I'm going, what is he doing? Is he playing possum with this injury? Because he plays 41 tough minutes last night. And the one thing you look at Embiid, where he's saving his energy, it's on defense. And I talked about this the other day. I heard Antonio Daniels on NBA radio say this, that offense, it's easier when you have an injury like that. It's easier to play through that because you know where you're going to go and you know your limitations. Defensively, you got to react. It's quick twitch. You got to hop around. You got to cover the weak side, all that stuff. And I think he's kind of laying back with that. He's not being that much of a defensive force or a rebounder to play on the other end where they absolutely need him. There are two guys that are scoring points for the Sixers. It's Joel Embiid and it's Maxey. And so last night, the same thing happened. Now, let me just say this. It was a miraculous performance. But it was a performance that probably should never have happened. Because Joel Embiid, and I'm going to give it to you straight, should have been thrown out of that game last night. And in two ways he should have been thrown out of that game. First of all, you saw what he did to Mitchell Robinson. And here's why he did it. Because sometimes, and I will say this, and I know people are going to come at me. Sometimes Joel Embiid can act like a little bitch. And that was evident last night. He was angry that he didn't get a call down the other end on a shot where he claimed somebody hit his arm. And then he was flailing on the way back down court, yelling at the officials. Then he gets into a position where he gets bumped by OG Anunoby, who knocks him on his ass. So now he reacts like some 14-year-old would. And the first guy he sees is Mitchell Robinson, who's right there. And he grabs his legs and tries to trip him while he's on the ground with his arm. And I'm going, oh, my God. I mean, that is such a cheap-ass bitch move. And I'm going, he needs to be thrown out of the game. Here's the dynamic of the NBA playoffs. Don't throw a star player out of the game. It is clear that maybe in a regular season that would have got their attention. But the officials know, and they've been hammered this thought in them, that you do not – nobody comes to see you. People are coming to see him. And this game's a national televised playoff game. Don't you dare throw a star player out of a game. And that's the thing that saved Embiid. Because frankly, that was on its face a ejectable offense. Well, let's add it up. Because before that, down the other end of the court, he got called for a regular offensive foul when he kneed Isaiah Hartenstein in the balls. All right, they looked at that and they said, geez, you know, if we give him a flagrant one here, that'll put him on the hook because another flagrant one, add two flagrant ones together, that's an ejection. So they let him up for air there by giving him an offensive foul on a knee to the groin, which saved him. And then they looked at the play and said, well, you know, that's really a flagrant two, but if we give him a flagrant two, we got to throw him out of the game. So that's the guys that we in unison there. It's a flagrant one. Yeah, we're in unison. Boom, it's flagrant one. Saves him from the game. Now, I don't want to take away anything from his performance, but the reality is the reality. And that was a bitch move by Joel Embiid. Now, I want him to stay in the game? Well, of course I want him to stay in the game because if he's out of the game, the series is over. If you eject him in the first quarter of that game, it's over. The Knicks win. They take a 3-0 lead, and the season is over. Because they preserved Embiid, the Sixers are back in the series. Now, how'd they do it? They did it because the Knicks didn't play the tough defense that they played in the first two games. And I know you're going to say, well, the Sixers should have won the second game. Maybe. But here's the bottom line. The Knicks allowed them to score 43 points in the third quarter. Now, that never happens to a Tom Thibodeau team. So that was the whole thing. They scored 43, outscored them 43-27 in that third quarter to really take control because the Knicks weren't engaged defensively like they have been. Now, back to Embiid. He didn't dominate inside. He didn't dominate by posting up. He dominated by making middle-range, medium-range jump shots. Now, what was in his favor is that Hartenstein got into foul trouble. So Hartenstein really couldn't chase him out there. Hartenstein was in drop coverage to make it difficult for him to score inside. So Embiid said, okay, if you're going to give me that jumper, I will take it. Outside the paint, Embiid was 10 for 13 in that game last night. He was 5 of 6 in the mid-range, and he was 5 for 7 from three-point land. That's 10 for 13 outside the paint because he got those open shots. Hartenstein and then Mitchell Robinson being out of the game with the turned ankle enabled them to score from that range. And I'm going to tell you something else. Well, first of all, they had to bring pressure to Chua in to play the center position. He got eaten alive. He got three quick fouls. So without the tandem, the Sixers can dominate the series with Embiid. And it remains to be seen whether Mitchell Robinson is going to come back in that series. He left the arena last night in a walking boot. And so you don't know. I certainly think he won't play game four, which means the Sixers can even the series on Sunday afternoon. And then you have the back and forth, the best of three, with two of those games being at Madison Square Garden. And this sure looks like a home court series to me, which means it'll get to a game seven where the Sixers will have to win at the Garden. So that was last night. They finally got some contributions from other people other than Maxi and Embiid, although they scored the majority of the points. Campaign comes out of nowhere. Now, Buddy Hield is lost in the series. The moment is obviously too big for Buddy Hield. He had never been in the playoffs. He looks lost. So they had to use Cameron Payne last night, and he gave energy. First of all, he made three threes, but he gave energy. He was engaged. He was raising his arms. He was getting the team fired up, getting the crowd fired up. Now, Oubre scored 15 points last night, even though defensively he got cooked by Brunson, who was back to his old self. And Oubre apparently was not injured in that Lamborghini accident. This guy, I don't know. I really don't know what to think about this guy. But he gave him 15 points last night, even though his defense was not spectacular. And the Knicks, conversely, did not get the contributions that they got off their bench in games one and two. Bogdanovic only made one three-pointer. And Deuce McBride wasn't as good as he was in game one and game two. So what happens in game four? The Sixers are a 4.5-point favorite in game four. Now, they were a 5-point favorite last night. They wound up covering. 4.5 is a pretty healthy number for the Sixers. So that's a line that tells me that the Sixers will win again on Sunday. And then we have an even Steven series with the Sixers needing to win two more games out of three, two of them being played in Madison Square Garden. I see a game seven in my crystal ball. I see the Sixers having to win and clutch up and win a game seven at Madison Square Garden. And if they do that, you imagine the life that that would give them in a second round series against either Indiana or Milwaukee. I mean, that would be just unbelievably key. All right, so last night, I know all of us were not at the game, and probably a good experience to be there last night. But we also had our eye on the NFL draft. Now, as I predicted, the Eagles didn't get to pick till about 10:30. But what I did not expect is that they would actually stay with their pick at 10:30. I really expected they were going to trade up, and I said it on our last podcast, they would trade up to get Quentin Mitchell. I did believe that he was their number one target. And I got to give them credit for being able to read the board to the point where they didn't panic to make a trade to get up. They read the board correctly. They were helped by, obviously, the 15 offensive players that were picked first in the draft and the six quarterbacks that were picked, which pushed everybody down. But I still thought there was a chance that they were going to lose Quentin Mitchell even as the board came down. Now, they know more than me. They got all these geniuses in the war room, and they're saying, you know what? Pick 22, he's going to come right to us. And sure enough, they pick Quentin Mitchell, which is it's one of the best picks that I've seen Howie Roseman make. I got to be honest with you. That, to me, was a real target for the Eagles to get that guy, and they wound up getting him. And so what's not to like about Quentin Mitchell? The only thing not to like about Quentin Mitchell is he played in Toledo. So all these numbers that are in his favor are also being done in a conference that's a little lower than a Power 5 conference. So let's look at his attributes. First of all, he's big, and I like that in a cornerback. He's 6 foot, 195. At the combine, he ran a 4.33 40. He had a 38-inch vertical. At Toledo, he defended 52 passes last year. He did not allow a touchdown in 402 snaps last year. He had 32 pass breakups. He has 32 pass breakups since 2022 for Toledo. That's seven more than any other FBS player during that period. He also had zero pass interference penalties last year, which is almost a miracle. He can play zone. He can play man. And again, the caveat is he's doing all this in that conference playing for Toledo. But you look at the other side of that and say, man, that's a kid with character. He decided to stay at Toledo. When he was being grabbed at by and with this portal, he could have gone anywhere he wanted to go. Now, did he do that because he was loyal to Toledo? Or did he do that because he knew he can accumulate all those numbers playing in that conference. I don't really know. I don't care. I'm looking at him as a player. I think it was the best possible pick they could have made, unless you think Terrion Arnold was a better pick, the kid from Alabama, and he's a little smaller than Quinyon Mitchell. So let's bring Darren in here for his evaluation of the pick. Really good numbers for Quinyon Mitchell, and I think they got the right guy. What say you?
Interestingly enough, Mike, Nick Saban said last night that he was their number one target last year in the portal to get him in, but he wouldn't enter the portal. He's the guy they want, which I also find interesting because they had already Arnold and McKinstry on the roster, and yet they still wanted this kid number one in the portal. I think he's a good pick. Everything about him screams he's going to be a stud. His size, his speed, his ability to play press man, but he specialized in Toledo at off zone, which is what Fangio likes from his cornerbacks. So he should fit in with the Eagles very well. I would have liked Arnold more only because of the competition that he's played. And again, that's the one knock on this kid. But the more I read about him, he's got a lot of intangibles. He's a good kid. He's an honorable kid. Like you said, staying with Toledo and honoring that commitment. I think he could turn out to be an excellent pick.
All right. Last time, of course, they drafted a cornerback in the first round. You have to go all the way back to 2002. And that was, of course, Lito Shepard.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, that draft, they also got Sheldon Brown. And who's the safety they got? Also,
Michael Lewis.
Michael Lewis. They got almost their whole
Michael
secondary.
Lewis, Colorado. Yeah, that's when Andy – now, it's interesting because the Eagles, under this regime, value cornerbacks very highly. And the fact that they haven't taken one in their regime is really kind of puzzling. But they got their guy last night. I think it's the best pick they possibly could have made. A lot of people thinking that they were going to get an offensive tackle. They did not do that. They got the corner, which they need desperately because their starting corners are old. Let's face it. They're going to need some people in there. I know they got Kelee Ringo. A lot of people are high on him. But if they make a transition to youth in the near future, then you got two corners that you can play with both those guys that have pretty good pedigrees. Okay, let's look at the draft. And everybody's shocked by the same development. I'm watching the draft. And so let's just run it down. The three quarterbacks go early. Of course, Caleb Williams goes number one. He had a nice side piece with him last night. You see that? He had a nice little, wag there. She had a nice little silver sequin gown.
Yeah.
He was parading her around there last night. Nice work by Caleb. I always am intrigued by the girlfriends. I got to be honest with you. You know, when they shoot to like the J.J. McCarthy's and where their girlfriends are always there next to them. And I always wonder whether those girlfriends are going to be phased out when these guys make the real money. Like, it's one thing to have a girlfriend in college. Another thing when you kind of get into the big show,
right?
And you get a bigger selection. Whether the college girlfriend goes by the wayside, but in any event,
you're shooting fish in a barrel at that point.
Yeah, I digress. Drake May goes two. Jaden Daniels goes two to the Washington Commanders. The Kim Ellis, I know you like that pick. Drake May, I don't know. I mean, Drake May could be, he could be another guy like the guy they just got rid of who was a bust. But who knows? Drake May, North Carolina.
Sam Howell.
For Marvin Harrison, as everybody predicted, would go to Arizona. He does. But now the Chargers throw a little wrench in there because the Titans, and every mock draft you've ever seen, we're going to wind up with Joe Alt from Notre Dame. And the Chargers go, not so fast, my friend. And they grab him at number five, which means number six goes to the Giants. And it's Malik Nabers. A lot of people very high on that selection. Of Malik Nabers. They needed somebody dynamic. They got him. J.C. Latham, the first offensive lineman off the board, goes to the Titans, who missed out on all. They get a consolation prize, J.C. Latham. Probably a little high for him, but they needed that position. They get him. And then here comes the shocker. At number eight, Michael Penix, the quarterback from Washington, goes to the Atlanta Falcons, who just signed Kirk Cousins to a deal that guarantees him $80 million of $100 million that contract signed him. And people were just scratching their head. I don't understand. First of all, he's 23.
He's 23.
He's 23. So
he's a little old
so at the end of the 3-year contract, maybe 26. Now maybe it's prudent. I don't know. Maybe it's prudent. The Packers proved that was prudent. They did it twice, in fact. So maybe it's not so bad to have a future star quarterback sit for a couple of years or be able to play if the older quarterback gets hurt. But they need so many other positions that I just thought it was strange that they would take Michael Penix there.
It didn't make any sense to me either. I wonder if you, in their heart of hearts, in a dark room with nobody around, if they could go back and not sign Kirk Cousins, knowing they could get Penix if they would, you know, not go through with that.
Yeah, it's an interesting scene in the war room where it appeared that the general manager had explained his rationale to the owner, Arthur Blank. was like kind of confused at the selection.
Mike, they made the last couple of years, they made some odd picks in the first round. They picked a tight end, Kyle Pitts, with the fourth pick overall.
They pick offensive players.
Yeah.
And then they lament how bad they are on defense. you know, there you go. Arthur Blank's going, I'm going to have to sell. You know how many more wrenches I'm going to have to sell now? All right. Anyway, Rome Odunze, a lot of people were very high on him. So the Commanders get him. Bears get him. So they grab the quarterback and they grab a receiver right out of the chute. Two tremendous picks for Chicago Bears, Rome Odunze.
Signed Keenan Allen,
and J.J. McCarthy. What's that?
Bears also signed Keenan Allen. So they might have a pretty good offense.
Yeah, they're going to be a good team eventually. At 10, the Minnesota Vikings get up there and they grab J.J. McCarthy. It's kind of weird to move up one spot. Like, what were they afraid that? I guess they were afraid somebody else was going to get to the Jets to move into that spot.
The Jets were rumored
to get a quarterback. So they grab the 10th spot. They grab J.J. McCarthy. Hey, that's a perfect team for him. Be playing indoors. They can bring along a young quarterback. I think that's a really good selection. And then the Penn State, Penn State offensive tackle. A lot of people had some bad things to say about him, including Mel Kiper Jr. last night, saying he can't do this, he can't do that. But the Penn State kid goes to the Jets at pick number 11. Then another quarterback. You know, the Broncos, that's Sean Payton thinks he can turn anybody into Drew Brees. So he overdrafts and goes with Bo Nix at 12.
Well, he's the type of quarterback that Payton likes. He's a very accurate passer. He's a six-year student. I didn't know that.
Way too high for him.
Probably.
But all right, knock yourself out, Sean. Brock Bowers, who may have been my favorite player in the draft, goes to the Raiders, who really thought that they were going to get Michael Penix. Instead, they get a very versatile tight end. Fuaga, the offensive tackle from Oregon State, goes to the Saints. Latu, the edge rusher, UCLA, goes to the Colts. Good selection there. And you know, here starts the defensive players. Byron Murphy, a defensive tackle from Texas, goes to the Seahawks. Dallas Turner, edge rusher from Alabama, highly rated, goes to the Vikings. Amarius Mims, the massive Georgia offensive tackle, goes to the Bengals. Jared Verse, edge rusher, Florida State, highly rated, goes to the L.A. Rams. Fontenot, who we talked about yesterday on the podcast, the guard, goes to the Steelers. And Chop Robinson, in an upset, gets drafted by the Miami Dolphins. Two Penn Staters in the top 21. The Dolphins get Chop Robinson, Quinyon Mitchell, of course. And then you get Brian Thomas, the wide receiver, which I think is a really good selection. I think he's going to be a good player. Goes to the Jacksonville Jags. Terrion Arnold, the cornerback that many thought the Eagles could take, goes to the Lions. Jordan Morgan, offensive tackle from Arizona. He got panned by a lot of people. That's a strange selection. Graham Barton from Duke, who probably is center in the NFL, goes to the Tampa Bay Bucks. Darius Robinson, edge rusher, Missouri, goes to the Cardinals. Xavier Worthy, just a kid with the speed, goes to recreate Tyreek Hill, who revealed yesterday he has 10 children. Xavier Worthy, as far as I know, doesn't have any children yet. So that's a win for the Kansas City Chiefs. And wide receiver, Tyler Guyton, the offensive tackle from Oklahoma, goes to the Cowboys, who made that trade to go back. Nate Wiggins finally selected at pick number 30 to the Ravens. Ricky Pearsall, the wide receiver,
a big wide receiver, Florida, and Xavier Leggett, South Carolina, rounds out the first round. So let's talk a little bit about Tyreek Hill and the ramifications of having 10 children. You know, Andrew Brandt says this all the time. There will be lawyers. And my man, when he runs out of cash, you know, lawyers are going to be hunting him down for child support. Dude, keep it in the holster, for Christ's sake. 10 children? You got Mother's Day coming up. What house are you going to? I mean, this is unbelievable. He topped Sean Kemp. I don't think anybody could top Sean Kemp.
I think he had the 10 kids in like 12 years, too. It's some ridiculous number like that where, I mean, I don't know how many women he's had them with, but ridiculous.
All right, I'll hear stories like that, and I go, come on, man. Like, what's the point? Really? You know, throw Jimmy Cap on every now and then.
Really?
Jimmy Cap never hurt you.
Seriously.
All right. That is the draft. Now, interestingly enough, someone else had a very interesting reaction to the Eagles draft. He happens to be a dreaded Cowboy. He's out of Penn State. We know him. We love him. Micah Parsons was on some kind of a show, a digital show, and he was disgusted by the selection of Quinyon Mitchell because he knows that's really going to help the Eagles, and he liked Quinyon Mitchell a lot. So here is the disgust of Micah Parsons when he finds out that the Eagles selected Quinyon Mitchell.
And with the pick, the 22nd pick, the Eagles, yes! Selecting Micah Parsons' favorite player for the second straight year, cornerback out of Toledo, Quinyon Mitchell! Oh, man. Hold on. Let me pull up my stats and all my notes. We'll do the video and then we'll check in on them. Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, a 4.33 40. Holy moly, is this guy fast. He had 6 interceptions. 2 of them he took back for touchdowns. Quote, an elite cover man that dominated the Senior Bowl and blazed the combine. Wow, he squatted 555 pounds and in practice ran 23.6 miles an hour. You know what? Before we get to the video, Micah, how you feeling?
I mean, I'm honestly utterly disgusted on how lucky the Eagles are. It's just like Chris, I do not know how he fell that far with this run of offensive tackles and quarterbacks. That's the only thing that makes sense. I thought he was a top 15, top 12 talent, and he just fell right into their laps.
And he was your favorite player?
He was definitely one of my more favorite players in this draft. Like I said, he rose in every bar. He hit he checked every box. And like I said, we don't know what Darius, and the mentors, he has one of the best quarterbacks to play the game, Darius Slay, to mentor him. They still got Elias Ricks, who stepped over big time last year.
Yes, he did.
They got James Bradbury, a guy who may not have the big year he wanted, like the year he had before his All-Pro year, but he's still a good quality pair, and you just add him. And he could play inside or out. I think this is a great pick. I mean, I think this is a terrific pick, man. I don't know how Howie and them get so lucky. That's how I'm going to put it.
How about that? So there you go.
That was a Bleacher Report show.
Okay. Yeah. It was the guy, Jared Greenberg, was the host of the show, right? Yeah. Okay. So interesting reaction. But I thought it was a home run that the Eagles hit last night. I really do. And I'm amazed that you could have the patience to just stay, knowing that guy was going to fall to you. I don't know how you could figure that out. If it was me, listen, if I got down to pick 18, and he was still there, I said, at this point, I can't lose him.
Yeah,
I got to call number 19 and go, dude, flip-flop with me. I can get my man. But they reasoned accurately who these teams were going to take, and they weren't going to take the cornerback.
I think they probably had, and I know this is fairly common, they probably had 2 or 3 guys, right? That I'm thinking they had Fontenot, the lineman from Washington, Mitchell, and Terrion Arnold. And at some point, they figured, one of these 3 guys is going to fall to us. Let's just stay here. Minnesota, I thought, was really sharp. How often do you see them get it? They got a key player, very key player, on offense side of the ball and defensive side of the ball in the first round. So I thought they did a nice job.
All right. So two good results last night. You're sitting there at home. You went to bed with a smile on your face. You know, the Sixers win and you flip the channel. Here comes the Eagles draft pick. And it's the guy that I wanted. And I think a lot of people wanted. I think it was the best selection they could have made at that position. And rarely do you see that in the draft. There are always people who go, I don't know why they did that. I don't know why they did this. I think there's 100% acceptance with the Eagles draft. And now we'll see what the rounds are to starting tonight and going into the weekend on who else they can grab here. All right, so they had two good results last night. Sixers win, save the series, and be with a 50-piece last night with Bad Wheel and Bell's Palsy. An amazing performance by the guy. And if you were down there last night, you got treated to something special. Okay, that'll do it for the most interesting part of this podcast. It is time now for Mike Unleashed, which will be silly. Now, let me just be honest with the people out there who know my track record. It is no secret that I loathe this Eskin dude, right? And I have many reasons to loathe him. I think he is one of the most disingenuous, insecure maggots that I have ever come across in working in this industry. And I'll tell you a couple stories after this. But apparently someone else thinks the same thing. And it's a guy named Kyle Newbeck, who we had on the podcast, used to cover the Sixers for the Philly Voice, and now covers them for PHLY, the new digital entity that my friend Anthony Gargano is involved in. And here is, I don't know what triggered this at all, but here's what Kyle Newbeck had to say on his live show about the Zeskin.
We are deep enough into his career to say he's got to win some of these. He's got to win when the chips are down and drag some people along with him. And has not been able to do so. And I get it. He's been hurt and there are all the excuses. He's got to come through. But this is not the time to be relitigating all the Joel Embiid arguments.
He's doing everything he can.
He has done everything that I think you could realistically ask for from him. And I would say even more on top of that. Now is not the time, Howard Eskin, to be saying shit about Joel Embiid.
If you want to say Sixers will never win with Joel Embiid, he's soft, there's a place where you can do that. 215-592, you know the rest. This is not
listen,
that show.
I love most of my people at WIP, so this is not a WIP thing. This is a that guy who shows up and grandstands at press conferences, leaves before halftime, and pretends like he has any salient analysis to offer about basketball.
Wow. All right, so did we... he had the curse word in there.
Yeah.
And apparently he was berated for using the curse word. But I appreciate the sentiment. I thought it was an excellent job.
Oh, yeah. I think it was triggered because Harold is always,
he's ripping the Embiid.
He's always railing on Embiid. Always. And
he's railing on Embiid. Yeah. Now, let me give you why. And this is because I've been around the guy for years and I know how he operates. Yeah. This guy is such a stone phony, A. B, he's the dumbest guy I've ever worked with. I did a show with him for 3 years. It was 3 years of me being in hellfire. That's how uncomfortable the show was to do it with him. Because we couldn't be more opposite on how we view sports. I view it objectively. Here's what an insecure and disingenuous person does. When a player or a coach patronizes him, they have a friend for life. In fact, once on the air, I said, you're like a golden retriever. Somebody pats you on the head and your tongue wags. And so this is what he does. So Embiid has never patronized the guy. Therefore, he attacks him like a coward on whatever show he has at 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, because obviously he doesn't call him Howard or doesn't patronize him. And the same thing happened with Allen Iverson back in the day. The Allen Iverson camp said, F you, get away from me, you slimy maggot. And so, therefore, he hated Allen Iverson. Of all people, you hate Allen Iverson, right? Solely because you're an insecure guy and he doesn't patronize you. And that's how you measure on who you like or who you dislike. Now, let me just tell you a couple stories here. Many years ago, I was doing the show with him. We were at Eagles camp at Lehigh. We have Andy Reid ready to come on. We're into a commercial. Andy Reid is going to come in and sit down with us. And so Andy Reid goes behind Eskin and starts rubbing his shoulders like this and says, well, you know, Howard, us redhead guys have to stick together. And Andy Reid looks at me and winks as if to say, I'm playing this fool, and he doesn't even know it. And that's all you have to do. A golden retriever pat on the head, and you have a friend for life. Now, here's the other circumstance. Anybody who ever watched Dikembe Mutombo would tell you, anybody with, you could have one eye, and that one eye could have an astigmatism and glaucoma, and you could see that Dikembe Mutombo has ping pong paddles for hands. He couldn't catch a ball. If you lobbed it to him, it was a beach ball at Seaside Beach, right? So Larry Brown does the same thing that Andy Reid did. He patronizes Howard. Hey, Howard. And he calls him Howard. That's very important. If you're a coach and you call him Howard, like a dog, his little red thing will stick out. All right?
I call him Harold.
So Larry Brown should do that all the time. And so I'm making the point on a show how bad Dikembe Mutombo's hands were. I was a big advocate of the team before Dikembe Mutombo. I thought that trade ruined the Sixers. Now, they got to the NBA Finals, but they had a 500 record with Dikembe Mutombo as opposed to Theo Ratliff. So I go, he goes, what don't you like about Mutombo? I go, he can't catch the ball. Every time they try to feed it in the post, it bounces off his hands. He's got terrible hands. He's got ping pong paddle hands. Eskin says to me, no, he's got good hands. Larry tells me he's got good hands. I go, what are you blind? Like this. And so when I heard Kyle Newbeck do that, I went, yeah. It's so ridiculous that this guy is still allowed to parade around and ask a question in a press conference just to hear himself talk. It is absolutely pathetic. So Kyle, you're now my new best friend. All right. I think that'll do it for Mike Unleashed. I don't think I have anything left after that.
That was it was quite a sound bite. It really was. I'm sorry he got in trouble for it, but listen, I have stories. I can't tell my stories on the air with him. I put him in the drywall at WIP. There was an aspirin.
Anybody that let's be a lesson.
Drywall for a month.
Any credibility you give the guy, just know it's tempered by the fact on who likes him and who doesn't like him. All right. So if you're going to criticize Joel Embiid of all people, all that tells you is Joel Embiid does not give him the time of day. Yeah. It's a very simple equation to figure it out. All right, man. Enough. I told myself I'd never ever talk about him ever again, but sometimes I can't help it. And when I heard Kyle Newbeck do that, I go, well, yeah, okay, let me join.
Yeah, it was worth noting.
All right, I think that's going to do it for the Mike Mussinelli podcast for today. Again, don't forget the Bet Rivers and the contest that we're going on right now, which you can get a profit boost up to 100%. It's called the Bet Rivers Bet and Get. You bet the first basket of the Sixers-Knicks game, you can get a profit boost up to 100% from 20 to 100%. So do that. Thanks to the people at Bet Rivers. And I did not bet last night. I was kind of afraid of how the Sixers would play in that game. But now I'm a little comfortable. And now I may go with them on Sunday through my Bet Rivers app. You can get in touch with me via email, mike@mikemiss.com. Or check my Twitter out, which will this podcast will be posted, obviously, a little later on Twitter, which is MikeMiss25. All righty, I think that'll do it. You're headed down the shore, Cape May Courthouse. Don't forget to stop in and tell them I sent you for a glass of wine at Natale Vineyards. All righty. Have a great weekend, everybody. The weather looks like it's going to be really nice. Let's wait till Sunday to see what the Sixers do. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Mussinelli podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.